Anakin, you're breaking my heart. You're going down a path I can't follow.
Because of Obi-Wan.
Because of what you've done, what you plan to do. Stop. Stop now. I love you.
Liar!
No.
You're with him. You brought him here to kill me.
No, Anakin.
Let her go, Anakin. Let her go.
You turned her against me.
You have done that yourself.
You will not take her from me.
Your anger and your lust for power have already done that. You have allowed this Dark Lord to twist your mind until now. Now you have become the very thing you swore to destroy.
Don't lecture me, Obi-Wan. I see through the lies of the Jedi. I do not fear the dark side as you do. I have brought peace, freedom, justice, and security to my new empire.
Your new empire?
Don't make me kill you.
Anakin, my allegiance is to the Republic, to democracy!
If you're not with me, then you're my enemy.
Only a Sith deals in absolutes. I will do what I must.
You will try.
A review podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. I hate y'all so much. Each week, we will be breaking down a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, whatever it feels like. And this week, continuing our Star Wars series, if it wasn't clear in the cold open, we watched Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists that I have with me to help break this down today.
Hey everyone, I'm Samuel, and this is the best Star Wars movie ever.
Hey, this is Tyler, and I agree.
Yeah, it's John.
It is Russell playing Padme, of course.
The music just need to end this podcast with the scene of Darth Vader.
Oh my goodness!
In the chamber with
no. No.
Where is Padme?
She was alive. She I found that.
It seems in your anger you killed her.
No.
Beans.
So, oh good lord, we got some weird energy today. If it sounds a little different in here, we are actually recording in our Netherdeep space. Where we're
in our official, insert brand name here, podcast studio.
Our official Mad Artist Entertainment podcast studio.
Yeah, we are on our Netherdeep set, which we'll talk more about towards the end of this, but that's our D&D stream coming up in 2 days, premiering in 2 days.
By the time you're listening to this, it was yesterday.
Yeah,
we were happy to see you.
Yes, by the time we're listening to this.
Thanks, everybody, for checking it out.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks for making it a great premiere. Question mark.
Question mark?
Do not do us like you did with Forced Comedy, please. I promise
we'll never speak of Forced Comedy ever again.
No, this show's actually good. Come watch it.
Cursed comedy.
Getting a cursed comedy? No!
Shut up!
Hey, I was an advocate for day one.
Yeah!
I have a right to say cursed
Tyler,
comedy.
Tyler, the only reason it's cursed comedy is because of how you advertise it. If you would advertise it not as no one's watching it, please watch, then maybe
or
people
everybody's
would watch
watching it.
It,
please watch.
Join everyone else.
Look, in this game, you're either all or nothing.
Is there no one else?
All right, let's talk about movies.
Yeah, let's talk about the movie. Guys, so Samuel, I'll let you start off. How did you become introduced to this movie?
Well, I was watching the prequels. No, I watched
this
them.
Was the next
so
one
I
the
watched
series.
The original trilogy when I was like 11 or 12 with my dad, and then my cousin Aaron lent me his prequel DVDs, and I was watching them all. And from okay, so I went on a bit of a journey with the prequels. I was a really big prequel fan when I first watched them. And I told my dad that. I said, you know, I think I like it better than the original trilogy. And he said, how dare you? You heathen. You absolute heathen.
You're breaking my heart.
And I said,
you're going down a path.
Never mind. You're right. The original trilogy is better. And so I was a big prequel defender when I was really young. And then as I got older, I started saying, you know, oh, no, the prequels are bad. The prequels are trash. The prequels are bad. And then I went back when I was 16 or 17 and rewatched them all. And just ever since then, I've been like, no, screw it. I'm a prequel defender, prequels for life. Revenge of the Sith is my favorite movie, not even close. My favorite Star Wars movie. And top five movies of all time. And yeah, that's my journey with Revenge of the Sith.
All
right. And by the way, I'm just going to put this out here right now. Anybody who likes this movie, go read the novelization. The novelization of this movie is incredible. It's the best novelization of any movie like I've ever read. It enhances it in so many ways. Go read it.
Well, according to its Amazon reviews, yeah, it is absolutely adored. It has a higher rating than the movie on Amazon.
Yeah, because it is
incredible.
Yeah,
it's 3% higher.
If you want to borrow it, I have it. It is an incredible book. I know you're much
to, yeah, to make but, everybody yeah. who's listening believe that I actually read an M Culture, I'd love to. I'd love to. I don't think I'm going to actually read it, though.
I don't know how to read.
You would love it. It has so much stuff
you.
About it that you
I actually
love.
Might, because, like,
try
if I were to read...
Try the audiobook, maybe.
Oh, well, then there you go.
Okay.
All right, and that's our podcast.
No.
Don't try and find the audiobook.
I was just waiting for y'all to finish. John, how about you?
Honestly, I'm trying to remember exactly how I got introduced, because my dad was never a big Star Wars buff, neither was my mom. I want to say my dad just had Star Wars Battlefront 2, and I kind of played that a bunch growing up. Because here's the thing, I don't ever remember, like, physically going, like, I want to watch The Phantom Menace. I think I started with Attack of the Clones. Maybe that's why it has a special place in my heart, not because of the thousands of clones in it.
Both of them.
Both
those animated shots.
But, and once I realized it was part of a series, I started watching them all, and honestly, I never understood the hate that Revenge of the Sith got, or any of the prequels for that matter. I personally loved it, but, I mean, that was just me.
What about you, Tyler?
Okay, so, I actually, my mom and dad, my mom would watch movies just for my brother and I's enjoyment. My dad is very, like, if it didn't happen in real life, I don't want to watch it. so when you're talking about a movie of wars happening in the stars, he's not about that life. So my grandma actually introduced it to me because it's, like, my uncle's, like, favorite series ever. And so I remember watching I saw the lightsabers as, like, a really young kid. And I watched Episode 1 was actually the first Star Wars movie I had seen.
Okay.
Followed by Attack of the Clones. And I would watch Phantom Menace actually over and over and over and over and over again, because we couldn't find the Attack of the Clones VHS, like, after, like, the third time that we watched
it. So you're like, if I just watch this three times, I've seen the trilogy.
Exactly. So when Revenge of the Sith actually was coming out in theaters, we went and saw it in theaters. And it was absolutely, like at that point I was like, yep, this is gonna be a part of my personality forever. Look at this. Seeing that the best opening ever with the Jedi fighters in the theaters was stupid. It was I just remember being a young, very young kid, probably too young, watching this going just losing my mind.
You're the immolation scene starts happening, and your grandmother's like, ooh.
Yeah, I'm just like, wow. But it was crazy because it was interesting because I hadn't seen 4, 5, and 6 at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole Darth Vader thing, it was like, oh, and that's, wait a minute, isn't that the guy from the next ones? And that was how that whole thing.
So
had
you
gone.
Basically saw it like.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,
yeah,
7,
the,
8,
the
9.
Way that we're sort of doing it this, like yeah, a little
kind
bit,
of,
yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah, close.
And so it was a very interesting experience, you know, but seeing it live and on screen, seeing Count Dooku just be the coolest thing ever, it's just, oh my God. At that point, I was like, this is like one of my favorite things of all time, and it became ingrained into my brain forever.
As it should.
As Russell?
It
should.
You got Spain.
You living Jawa.
Now, I need everybody to close your eyes and go on a journey with me. Now, imagine yourself at, like, what, 12 years old when this came out? When this came out, like, 2007?
2005.
Oh, my gosh. I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
The bit's over.
That was it. He just wanted you to close your eyes and think about him being
No, not that. That's fine.
The audience can't see you, bud.
I was 10 years old, and my dad was the biggest Star Wars buff in possibly in the world. He had all the toys when he was a kid. He watched all of the movies in theaters when he was a kid. And so when these started coming out in theaters, naturally, he took his sons because he wanted to watch them. And he's like, well, let's make it a family event.
Yeah.
And so for this movie specifically, he woke me up at 11:30 at night.
That's
on a school night, blasting the Star Wars theme out of our like home theater system. And woke everybody up like that, and we went and saw the midnight premiere of this movie.
That's so awesome.
That's so cool.
He had all of like the Halloween costumes out.
I knew I liked
Jonathan. He's incredible. But he had all of the Halloween costumes out. We had Chewbacca costume. We had Darth Maul costume. We had like young Anakin costume, just Jedi robes. And like we went to the theater dressed up and watched this movie on the midnight premiere. And the electricity in that theater was unbelievable. Like, everybody was losing their minds.
What'd your dad dress up as?
He probably just went as Darth Maul. That was his, like, costume that he wore all the time. And just
around the house, just, like,
yeah,
picking
course,
you up
yeah,
from school.
Yeah. Darth Maul. As Darth Maul.
Yeah, with the double saber and everything, of course.
Exactly, right.
But yeah, but, so that is just, like, a mini, like, introduction to how I got introduced to it. The longer story, I'm just kidding.
No, I as a kid, I really only watched the original trilogy. I didn't watch any of the prequels at all. Probably because my dad just either didn't like them or wasn't interested, and so we just didn't own them. I don't think I actually saw any of the prequels until I was almost out of high school or maybe even out of high school. Because they just, I had friends who were watching Star Wars for the first time, and they were like, we're going to watch it chronologically. And so I just came over, and I was like, what is this? This isn't Star Wars. And I got up, and like, I think I just left. But I don't know if it was this movie. It may have been Attack of the Clones. It may have been something else that I remember watching with them and just kind of being like, eh, it's not the same as the other ones. But I did watch this one fairly recently with Samuel, like before watching it last night.
In the middle of COVID.
Yeah, sort of in the middle of COVID. And I remember liking it more this time. I don't know why. Maybe just because the energy in the room was, like, really hype or something. I don't know. But the first time I'd watched it, like, with him, I was like, I really am not sure if I've, you know, actually, you know, seen this before. And I was like, eh, it's okay. But last night I was enjoying it more. So I guess that's a good sign. This gets better the more times you see it, apparently.
Yeah,
100%.
And for context, I attempted to sabotage the movie watching last night because I was just that excited and a little inebriated.
I was going
to
say, and also drunk.
And
would not stop talking.
It was some of
the
most fun I think I've... It was some of the most excitement I think I've ever had watching a movie.
It wouldn't have been irritating if you had put on the captions, because then I could have kept up.
I'm
but the
sorry.
Thing was, all of y'all have seen it a million times, and then Candace wasn't coming on the podcast, and I'm sitting here like, I've seen this like once. I have to actually
have
know
to
what's
focus.
Happening. And y'all were like talking over conversations, and I was like, I have no clue what they just talked about, like at all, because there are no captions.
And that's why she hates the movie.
No, that's just why I hate Tyler.
Got him.
But this movie came out in 2005. It was directed and written by George Lucas, and it stars Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker, Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Natalie Portman as Padme. You can watch this with a Disney Plus subscription, or you can buy or rent it on Vudu, Apple TV, YouTube, Prime Video, or Google Play. And the IMDb summary for this says, 3 years into the Clone Wars, the Jedi rescue Palpatine from Count Dooku. As Obi-Wan pursues a new threat, Anakin acts as a double agent between the Jedi Council and Palpatine and is lured into a sinister plan to rule the galaxy. I don't believe Samuel has anything for us today.
We've done all of George Lucas.
We've covered George Lucas.
What's his middle name?
Samuel
Lucas.
Said, hold, please.
George Marvolo Lucas.
No!
It's an actual anagram.
Walton. George Walton Lucas.
There we go.
Wow.
There's something new about George Lucas.
George.
You're welcome.
It's there you go.
For thanks for joining
Darth
us.
Well, do y'all have any, I guess, overarching points that you'd like to talk about before we dive into the plot here?
I feel like we should address all our plots when they come up in the story and not say everything at the beginning.
Yes.
Okay.
So no one say anything.
All right, so let's dive in then.
I will try.
See, in these episodes, I never have to worry about, like, coming up with talking points because I know Samuel's going to interrupt me. And so I'm like, so I never have to worry about, like, reading too much of the plot at once because I know he's going to butt in, like, real quick.
Yes.
So, watch, I'm going to get 3 words into this, and he's going to go, okay,
we
like, immediately.
We're stopping.
I know you're going to do it.
Probably, I think.
It's going to be close. Yeah,
I'm probably going to get one sentence in, so let's see. Above Coruscant.
Yeah!
I knew you were going to do it. I was waiting for
so
it.
So loud.
RIP headphone listeners.
Sorry.
You can yell at Tyler.
Above, yes, please yell at him. Send him a personal message. Above Coruscant, please. Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker lead a mission to rescue the kidnapped Supreme Chancellor Palpatine from the cyborg separatist commander, General Grievous. After infiltrating Grievous's flagship, yep,
and
hop
there's
in.
Where you need to start. The opening to this film is so freaking incredible. The music, you come on the far side of the battleship. Oh, mm-hmm. It's so good.
Yeah. The CGI, see the two fighters not, yeah, it in sync with one another.
It's probably the longest tracking shot in Star Wars, I think. It's a really long tracking shot.
Something like that.
It's like a two, three minute tracking shot.
Oh, also, Tyler, you were wrong. It's not a toilet. It's a sink. It's a kitchen sink. It's not a toilet.
Foolish me.
You unprofessional son of a...
I clearly don't care about Star Wars.
You clearly don't care if you don't know what appliance it was.
Yeah. Son of a Sarlacc pit.
Yeah, clearly you didn't see it in the midnight premiere when you were 10 years old.
Yeah,
I didn't see it in the midnight
You know what?
Premiere.
It shows, so...
I can tell just by looking at you.
No, the beginning of this was actually a lot of fun. I hadn't even remembered it being as much fun as it was. So when it popped up, I was like, okay, this is actually like pretty cool. Go ahead.
Captures everything in such a short, condensed, exciting way. It shows you Obi-Wan and Anakin's relationship forged over the Clone Wars, and it shows you the person that Obi-Wan in Episode 4 was referencing when he was talking about Luke's father. And that is so cool.
Immediately, off the bat.
Immediately.
Yeah. The best fighter pilot in the galaxy.
In how they talk to each other, in how they showcase Anakin's whole, I don't want people to die, with the whole, I'm going to go help out the clone troopers who did end up dying. It showcases everything. And it even gives you a little insight to the fact it's just such a small, like, nothing thing. But Obi-Wan in this film is a little subtly like, he don't like droids. And I just think that's funny. It changes nothing. It affects nothing. It's just, they added that in where he's just like,
where
I don't like
him. Racist
flying is
droids.
For droids.
Yeah. He's just like, don't make another short-circuiting wire joke. He's like, did I say anything? And we're going, I didn't say anything.
No, I love the moment where Obi-Wan's got like all those little droids like crawling on his ship. They've ripped R4 apart, which made me sad. They've ripped R4 apart.
Get dunked on R4.
And Anakin just starts shooting at Obi-Wan's ship. And Obi-Wan's like, dude, stop. And
well,
he's
I
like,
agree. Bad idea.
And he's like, yeah, you're right. Probably not.
I love it because it just shows how confident Anakin is in his flying.
Yeah.
Because he starts shooting them off of his fighter, and Obi-Wan is like, what are you doing? And then he comes and starts smashing them with his fighter on Obi-Wan's fighter, and is like, what are you doing?
And it ended up working.
Yeah. It worked. Yeah. Like, he got them all off of the ship. He saved everyone's life.
And then R2 just had his little, you know, his little moment, which might just be him hyping himself up for the story.
Get him, R2.
R2, where the buzz droid center out.
But after infiltrating Grievous's flagship, Obi-Wan and Anakin battle the Sith Lord Count Dooku, whom Anakin overpowers and decapitates at Palpatine's urging.
So there's another incredible shot when they first get into the hangar and Obi-Wan launches himself out of the ship and does the battle.
Oh, that's so cool.
So
satisfying.
It's so smooth.
Well, and again, it shows a little bit of a difference. It shows, you know, how flashy Obi-Wan can be. And then Anakin is just the path of most destruction. He just uses his ship to take out like 10 or 15 battles.
Yep.
He just runs through eight and then like ejects R2 and just comes flying out.
And it also shows when you watch the prequels, two Jedis working together, always, no matter where they are in the fight, find a way to get back-to-back with each other.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Be close.
I was blowing because there was like a little fuzzy in the air and it was floating near my face, so I was just blowing.
Okay. But yeah, they always try and cover each other's sixes, and they do so organically, and I just think that's really cool.
Yeah.
stuff like that is just like nonverbal storytelling that I really, really appreciate. And then they fight Count Dooku, and then there's actual verbal storytelling where he objectively says, you have fear, anger, but you don't use them. And he, which is cool because recontextualized to the Clone Wars TV show, where Anakin and Count Dooku have tussles all
they,
the time.
Yeah, they fight.
They
all
fight
the
a
time.
Lot, and Count Dooku always bodies him. And so now Anakin's coming in, and he's just like, "Bro, I'm ready to mess this guy up." And he's like, "You're not gonna beat me unless you go use some dark side."
And it's
he goes fine, and then beats the heck out of him.
And it's also so brilliantly contextualized because if you watch the Clone Wars, you know why he is now willing to do that.
Right.
Whereas right. a year before he wasn't, you know, in the Clone Wars, and then everything with Ahsoka happened, mm-hmm. and everything with Padme spiraling out of control,
yep.
and he's frustrated with the Republic and with yep. the Jedis and with everybody, and so he's just like, screw it.
And now, not only is Obi-Wan out of commission, but Palpatine's in danger,
yep.
so two of the biggest yep. people in his life, save for Padme, and Ahsoka, I guess, are now in, like, critical danger as I'm dropping everything. and he has no other choice but to dip into the dark side to put this guy to bed. And he did
does.
So. It was really
no,
cool.
I
he wasn't to bed all right.
Yeah, no. I love shots like the after, like, you don't see him decapitate him, but he falls and you see his head roll away, yeah. like, kind of in the back of the shot. I love that. I just love shots like
that. One of the most
like
impressive things about that whole duel to me, too, is the fact that it's Christopher Lee is physically going toe-to-toe with Hayden Christensen.
There. Oh, yeah.
And that is insane because Christopher yeah. Lee was like 70 years old.
But he's a swordsman.
And Hayden's like 23,
he's
24.
An experienced sword fighter.
And, I mean, it is not a stunt double. It is
no.
Christopher Lee.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Because
incredible.
He wouldn't
so
let them do a stunt double.
Right.
He was like, this is pathetic. Put me in, coach.
Yeah. Like, he's like, I literally know what I'm doing. I promise.
I've been doing this for decades.
He literally, in World War II, hunted Nazis.
James Bond is based off of Christopher Lee.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Sir,
yes.
Oh my God.
Ian Fleming, who wrote the novels, is his cousin. And he based James Bond
wow.
off of his cousin, Sir Christopher Lee.
What a
who is the
what a legacy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
He's literally the coolest man ever.
He is James
wow.
Bond.
Yes.
I
Christopher
did not know
Lee's
that,
dope,
but that's
I'm a
awesome.
Huge fanboy for
I,
him.
I will say, I love...
He was personal friends with Tolkien. Go ahead.
No, you're good. I do love the personal shot of, like, now kill him. And just the subtle pan over of Count Dooku, like,
what?
Wait. Huh? Usually we just fight and then walk away.
Because like, Count Dooku, like, I more or less knew that, knew Palpatine's entire shtick at this point.
So, well, and in the novel, they explain it so much better. It's so cool. Okay. So in the novelization, how that whole scene is explained, because that whole scene is told from Dooku's perspective.
Really?
And what it is Dooku is like, okay, cool, so this is the big game plan, is I'm going to intentionally lose, they're going to capture me, Dooku's going to kill Obi-Wan, which is going to push Anakin further to the dark side, mm-hmm. and is going to, Dooku is then going to be captured, and he's essentially going to be able to retire in prison because Palpatine's going to send him somewhere nice.
Yeah.
And he's going to step back and let Anakin come in to be the new apprentice. So he knows Anakin's going to be the new apprentice, and he's just planning on retiring,
that's
essentially.
Wild.
And,
wild.
And
so
the
Dooku
plan
was
is for him to
not...
kill Obi-Wan. And so it's so cool because it goes into, and you know, the duel's happening, and it goes into all the different forms they're using, and Dooku's mm-hmm. sitting here like, oh, this is so easy, I've got this. And then they start changing how they're fighting, and he's like, hang on. What's going on?
Yeah.
What's happening?
Mm-hmm.
And,
wait, I'm getting overpowered.
And so he's so in shock by the end that when Palpatine orders Anakin to kill him, he's just like... It like, all clicks
bodied.
Into place. Like, his whole life for the last 10 years clicks into place, and he realizes he's just been another pawn.
Yeah, he's yep. just been used yep. by Palpatine yep. to, like, again,
if you
yeah.
read nothing else, read that chapter. You will... That's... As a Dooku fanboy, you will adore it.
Wow. Okay. I gotta
get that. Lord Tyrannus, dude.
Yeah.
So, Grievous escapes the battle-torn ship, which the Jedi crash-land on Coruscant. There, Anakin reunites with his wife, Padme Amidala, who reveals that she is pregnant. While initially excited, Anakin soon begins to have premonitions of Padme dying in childbirth. So I have to assume this whole movie takes place over several months?
It takes place over a couple of days.
The movie?
Yes.
how she was not showing in that first scene, and then she's like 9 months.
Yeah, she was.
Then why on earth would she have to say I'm pregnant?
She had big, baggy clothes on. Because she was trying to hide it because it was a scandal.
Okay,
says,
but then, okay, okay, I'll give you that. Then she's in a nightgown.
Remember that scene where she said, I have big baggy clothes on because it's a scandal?
she's in her beaded nightgown, and she's showing a little bit. She's, like, maybe at, like, the 6 months showing. And then suddenly, like, she's at the 9 months the next day?
Here's the thing. It is.
Does
it
the
is
Force
possible.
Just grow children
it
faster?
It is possible that yes. It was originally intended for it to take place over a couple of months. Because of what we're watching next time, which is Siege of Mandalore, the timeline, it has to be just a couple of days.
So Palpatine appoints Anakin to the Jedi Council as his personal representative. The Council, suspicious of Palpatine, approves the appointment, but declines to grant Anakin the rank of Jedi Master, and instead instructs him to spy on Palpatine, diminishing Anakin's faith in the Jedi.
Which is both outrageous and unfair.
Yep. And he is correct.
Yeah.
He is objectively correct.
Whining like a little about it was a little whatever.
But because he saw what they were doing.
Right.
Because he didn't expect them to put him on the council.
Right.
And they were like, we're putting him on the council. And he was
you're not a master.
Oh my gosh. And they're like, but you're not a master. And then he realized, I'm being used.
Yeah.
They don't actually want to put me on. They're being like, either put me
Samuel,
on.
Samuel, can
don't.
I please ask that you not hit the table? Great. You got it out of your system. Great.
Anakin is objectively right.
Right.
He just whines like a little baby. But he's still correct.
Yeah.
No.
100%.
Last night watching Anakin, I started to understand Chiron more, because Chiron and Anakin are very, very, very,
oh
very similar characters.
I
was sitting there and I was like, y'all are the most easily manipulated characters
correct.
On the face 100%. Of the earth. Like, so easy. And I was watching Anakin and I was like, no wonder Samuel loves Anakin so much, because he's Chiron, like straight up.
I've DM'd that character for a while, and I've played with that character for a while.
And you love him. He's your favorite.
Oh, so...
just a boy. Small child. A little boy.
But I never put that parallel together.
No,
that's
I figured it out last night, and I was like, all the pieces have come together. Okay, I gotta go back. I gotta go back to the 2 days thing for a second. Because it's so much, I feel like it's, to me, less powerful if it's 2 days, because that just seems like such an insane jump.
It's a few days. It's probably like a week.
It just seems like such an insane jump for him to make in that short of a time. It would make so much more sense if it was like 3 months. Like, that would make so much more sense to me.
Is it, though? Is it that insane of a jump?
It seems like it to me, but that's just me.
He uses the dark side in the first scene we see him in.
Yeah, but like,
but
then he goes to Obi-Wan and is this like, that was one thing that I had an issue with this movie, was that I could not figure out what changed from scene to scene with Anakin, to the point where I'm like, is he bipolar? And he went up to Obi-Wan and he's like, hey, I was wrong, dude, I'm sorry. And is like, you know, but and it seems like things are good. The next scene he goes to Padme and is like complaining and saying all this stuff about how he feels like used and everyone's just using him. And I'm just like, wait, hold on. You were fine like 5 minutes ago. Nothing's happened from point A to point B, but you're back on the whole like freaking out train, and you weren't 10 minutes ago.
I think it's just because he's confused. He's like he's very conflicted, and he feels like everybody is against him, except for Obi-Wan, of course, because Obi-Wan is just like, listen,
even,
Anakin, I'm on your side with this.
I think Anakin is being completely honest when after Order 66, when Padme's asking him about Obi-Wan, and he says, we can only hope that Obi-Wan has done the right thing and is staying with the Republic. I think Anakin genuinely hopes that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think he wants to. But, and it's something that it explains once the switch happens. And there's one line where he says it and it kind of goes unnoticed. But a lot of people are like, how can he go from, you know, he's trying to save his wife and now he's killing a bunch of people and killing younglings? That doesn't make any sense. Except there's one line that Palpatine delivers where he says, don't hesitate, show no mercy,
only through me can you.
Well, it's like only
together.
Only then will you be strong enough in the dark side.
That's right.
To unlock the secret to save your wife. Because that's the thing, is the more hateful things you do, the stronger you get in the dark side. The more hate you have, the more anger you have, the stronger you get. So
well, it wasn't
once
even
he
all
turns,
of that.
It's Once you turn, you go all out.
It's all or nothing.
Well, yeah. Once the turn happened, I wasn't, like, really concerned about it because I was like, yeah, this makes sense. It was before then when he was going back and forth, yeah. Like, you know, I'm good with everything. I'm freaking out. And it was just, like, all over the place that I was like, nothing has changed from this scene to this scene except something. I mean,
so
but
that,
I don't that know
that is
that
one other thing
is.
About this movie that is correct. The only complaint I have about this movie is it's a bit incomplete. Because they shot this and the original cut was like 4 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Holy
yeah, it
crap.
Was 4 hours.
And
oh my god.
And a lot of that stuff is left in the novelization and it explains a lot of those cuts. There's one storyline in particular.
Like where
I
they kill Shock
love.
T. You're talking yeah. about? Yeah.
There's one storyline in particular that I absolutely love that is cut out of the movie that they filmed all of. I think they even did a lot of the CG effects for it and then they ended up cutting it out right before release, which was the Birth of the Rebellion storyline. And it explains that they left one scene of it in, and it's when Padme is talking to Anakin, and is like, you know, what if the Republic is evil now? And it's kind of like, where did this come from? Because in the last movie, Padme was all, you know, pro-Republic, and what are you
yeah.
talking about? And it mm-hmm. kind of comes out of nowhere. Well, they filmed a whole bunch of scenes with her and Bail Organa, and Mon Mothma was in it, and a bunch
oh, wow.
of other of the leaders of the Rebellion starting the Rebellion, essentially. Like,
okay.
During this movie is when the rebellion starts.
Which would make sense why Organa yeah. was in that tail end of the sequence.
Yeah,
right.
Because Organa feels really out of place.
Because, like, out of nowhere in the third act, he's suddenly, like, a main character.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
And he hasn't been there the whole time.
He was a main character through the whole movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
With that four-hour cut, that makes a lot more sense.
And you can find all those deleted scenes. I've watched them all several times. They're really freaking good.
Yeah.
They're
no, apparently in the original 4-hour cut, the whole saving Palpatine sequence, the entire thing was over an hour alone.
Oh my god.
Yeah, the whole thing was over an hour.
They cut what Bob Anderson or not Bob Anderson, one of the choreographers said it was they had choreographed the best duel in like cinema history. The most intense duel in cinema history and they cut it.
Who was it against?
Obi-Wan against the four Magna Guards.
Oh.
Come on.
Before fighting Grievous.
Oh.
And they ran out of time in filming, and so they changed it to the...
Oh.
They, like, rehearsed it for weeks, and then they didn't have time to film it, so they changed it to him just using the Force to crush him.
That sucks.
But sucks.
But
Obi-Wan.
I was about to say, but Obi-Wan did cool stuff.
But you and McGregor, no.
God.
That makes me so upset. I wish you hadn't told me that. Now I'm just going to look at that and be like, it could have been more.
If we're talking about what we wanted out of this. I mean, I adore this movie, but one of the biggest things that I really, and this is super retroactive, but this is something I wanted so bad, was if they characterized General Grievous the way they did in the 2003 yep. animated Clone Wars series.
In what's his name?
Genndy Tartakovsky.
Yeah, Samurai Jack dude.
Dude, y'all... General Grievous is the coolest. He is the coolest thing ever because he is fear incarnate, like throughout the entire Clone Wars, and he is genuinely horrifying.
He was supposed to be something very different originally.
Gary Oldman was originally cast to play General.
Yeah.
Grievous.
Oh no, the original concept for General Grievous was totally different.
Even in Dave Filoni's Clone Wars, he's even a lot. They have one arc that it's in Grievous's lair, and he kills like two or three Jedi. Like it's intense. It's because it's Plo Koon.
No, it's Kit Fisto and his Padawan.
Yep.
I know that because that's important.
Yeah.
But, what?
No, I have a fun fact about, like, the concept for him originally, but I think I might save it for the end.
Yeah, let's save it for the end.
Yeah, we'll save it.
Moving on.
Meanwhile, I'm gonna try Utapau?
Utapau.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nailed it.
Grievous relocates the Separatist leaders to the volcanic planet Mustafar. Mm. Obi-Wan travels to Utapau to confront Grievous and it skips a little bit. It just says, and kills him. There's a lot that happens here.
Here's one of the best fun facts. Everything from when Grievous runs away and jumps on his speeder, and Obi-Wan jumping on Boga to Grievous' death, was directed by Steven Spielberg.
Yeah. No, Spielberg did actually a lot of sequences in this.
That's so cool.
He also choreographed because the entire ending duel with Obi-Wan and
because
Anakin.
Because it was taking so much time and they were so busy, Lucas had to have help. He couldn't do it all himself. So Spielberg ghost-directed whole sequences of this movie.
Yeah, he put together of the concepts for the entire final fight with Obi-Wan and Anakin. He put the whole thing together.
And that scene where the little wheel speeder and the boga are next to each other is very reminiscent of
Indiana Jones. Raiders of the Lost Ark, the Jeep. Yep.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
Do we have proof that the boga is okay?
No. He's probably dead.
I think Boga. The blast did not hit Boga.
No. And he landed in water and he looks amphibious. So I feel like he'd be fine.
I think Boga's fine.
I have to know that she's fine.
I think she's fine.
That's important to me.
Is that specific? Like, okay.
Boga isn't the name of the creature. Boga is her name.
Oh.
Her name is Boga.
Oh, really?
I thought it was the name of the creature.
Nope. It's her name.
Her name is Boga.
It's in the novelization.
Oh. It's in the novel, guys. Come on.
Do you know what the race is called?
It's in there somewhere. I can look it up.
Lizard.
Lizard creature. Big lizard.
That's why there's a big lizard on Bogano.
Oh.
Varactyl. Varactyl.
I was going to say Varactyl.
Varactyl.
I was thinking about it.
It was on the tip of my tongue.
Well, so he travels to confront Grievous and kills him in... I'm so obsessed with how Grievous moves.
I know.
Like, when he, like, changes his body to, like, skitter on, like, on four legs, I was like, that's the coolest thing ever. Like, it's so creepy and weird, and I love it.
It's so bug-like. Like, they took so much of his movements from Insectile movements.
Yeah.
Like, when he's talking to Palpatine after Dooku is dead, like, before Obi-Wan actually gets there, he's looking up at him, and every now and then his head, like, will twitch.
Yeah,
like,
his head moves like
Quasimodo.
Yeah.
He's like...
Yeah. His head, like, so moves like a little, strange. Like, you know, almost like a snake a little bit, the way it moves. And then, like, when he's just, like, relaxed, he's in, like, a praying mantis position. I'm like, oh, I love it.
And to think, General Grievous came from George Lucas going, I wonder if a robot would cough. And that's literally where it came from. I saw an interview.
And the cough in the movie that you hear, it's George Lucas's cough. They
really?
Were filming and he got sick and he was walking around the house coughing and he said, "This sounds really cool." And he recorded his own cough. That is George Lucas's cough.
Oh my gosh.
That is so stupid.
I love that so dumb.
And he's voiced the actor for him. The actor for him is not an actor. It's Matthew Wood, who is like Ben Burtt's successor in the same way that Filoni is Lucas's. He's like the big sound guy. He does all the sound. He still does. He works on The Mandalorian and all that. He's like one of the executive like sound guys. And... after Gary Oldman fell through. There was like, hey, Matt Wood. Because it's barely a performance. It's so heavily, like, digitized and all. Like, you can find videos of him doing the voice, and he's just talking like this. And then they take it, and they run it
through
50 different sound effects.
Hello there.
Hello there.
General Kenobi.
Well, while Obi-Wan's doing all that, Yoda travels to the Wookiee homeworld of Kashyyyk to defend it from a separatist invasion.
Where the end of Return of the Jedi was originally supposed to take place.
Oh,
really?
On
Kashyyyk?
Because it wasn't supposed to take place on Endor, right? Yeah.
And then they changed it. I forget why. We'll figure out when we do Return of the Jedi. But there was a reason why he changed it from the Wookiees to the Ewoks and changed it from Kashyyyk to Endor.
Wow.
I will say, I think combat-wise, this is probably my favorite, like, Star Wars movie, if we're talking about just combat, because I love, obviously, watching, you know, Anakin and Obi-Wan just going at it. And, of course, I know you have your issues with Yoda. I have always really liked Yoda since I was a kid. And so, like, you know, say what you will about his decision-making, but I loved watching him fight in this movie.
Oh, yeah, like, I don't have any issues.
I loved watching him fight.
Yeah,
it was pretty epic. His fighting looks so much better in this movie than it does
in episode 2.
In Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
Because they focus so much more heavily on him using his force powers.
Right. Yeah. I loved when he just walked through the door and just waved his hand and the two guards just pass out.
They both die, I guess? I don't know.
He's just like pathetic, and they just, like, are dead.
And then Palpatine zaps him with the lightning, yep. and he walks up on him. He's just cackling, and he just yeets him across the across the room.
He goes flipping over
yeah,
the chair.
Yeah, and he tumbles over the chair like an old man, and then he goes to run, and Yoda jumps in front of him and says one of my favorite lines in the mm-hmm. movie, which is, if so powerful you are, why leave? And I'm just like...
And ignites his saber, like, and it's just like, oh, that's
yeah,
so good.
Yoda, why leave, Palpatine? Let's
though,
go!
But then Palpatine has a great response, which is, it doesn't matter if you kill me, because Vader
Darth Vader's
going
to be more powerful than either of us.
Well,
and then in the sequel trilogy,
no,
it's cool because
no, nothing's cool
because
in the sequel
and then
trilogy.
Palpatine,
yeah.
If Vader kills
Stop.
Palpatine, and he becomes all the Sith.
No,
that was a good decision. Says no one. That's so stupid.
We're gonna get there. We're probably gonna end up having Rick back on for those.
Yeah, Rick's gonna come on for 8 and 9.
Yeah,
that's
he
great.
He wants
he hasn't
to.
Seen him
he hasn't seen them, so he wants to come on for 8 and 9.
Yeah. That's gonna be great. Oh man,
I hope he doesn't like them. We're gonna
Rick's like
because I'm gonna be ripping
for...
them apart.
I hope he doesn't like them.
He comes in just ripping them to
terrible.
He comes in like with a fan shirt, like with a poster of the last.
Yeah. Yeah, just like, it's just Ren does it like the Superman, like I'm in Superman form
it's,
now.
It's like Rey's headshot and then Rey Skywalker at the
it's
bottom.
Just
and that's
it's just
Ben.
Oh no.
Yo, it's just Ben.
You just shirt and everyone in this Ben
Solo me.
Oh my gosh. So Palpatine tempts Anakin with his knowledge of the Force, including the dark side, and offers to teach him the power to prevent death in order to save Padme's life.
We have skipped somehow. Maybe my favorite scene in the movie.
You're talking about the opera scene?
Yes.
No, this is
that is
talking
the scene.
About.
Yeah, that's what talking about.
That is the scene.
No, because if this is after Grievous' death, because you've already read.
Yeah,
Grievous'
but the
death,
plot kind of it goes
okay,
around.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So this is that
but
scene. If you would like to talk
scene.
About it, but this is that scene.
Well, nothing really important happens in
no,
this scene.
It's not a big deal. No.
It's like the best. Scene ever. It's the heaviest dialogue scene in I think all of Star Wars.
It's definitely also the
really
arguably the best written scene in
yes.
the entire movie.
Yes.
Ian McDiarmid has talked so much in any interview. If you ask him what his favorite thing is, he's like, it's the opera scene.
Yeah.
Like, and it's so it's both of them are just acting their asses off.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an incredible scene.
Yeah, there are definitely like rough moments for Hayden throughout the movie, but he also has really good moments
yeah.
throughout
and
the movie.
And this is one of the
this
really,
is one of those
really,
really good
moments.
Moments
this is the,
this scene.
Is the moment for me. This scene is where I fully buy into his fault with the dark side.
Mm-hmm.
Is
yeah.
in this scene.
Well, because of how well Palpatine plays yeah. it, he doesn't show his yeah. hand just yet with the fact that he is a Sith Lord.
It's just enough.
But
he's like just
enough where he's like there is this ability out there, and it plants that seed of like, oh my gosh, I want to learn it. And it like it
how can I learn it? Not from a Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
It's oh man.
That line is great.
And how Palpatine,
and the way he delivers it too is fantastic.
Oh my god, the way that Palpatine is or Ian McDiarmid is able to play this character who is telling Anakin this story like it's a legend and is able to plant the seeds inside Anakin's mind at the same time congratulating himself on
mm-hmm.
being able
yeah.
to kill Plagueis.
Because you see it, you
yeah.
see it's
yeah.
so subtle when he's like, yeah,
but not himself.
He couldn't save himself, and it's so unbelievably subtle,
mm-hmm.
and it's just, oh, it's so
like
good.
That little smirk, like the glint
it's
in his
so
eye.
It's so small, and
oh,
he does it so well.
And that is why it is my firm belief that when you're doing Star Wars, you need to get Shakespearean actors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree.
Because
I think,
there's a certain... George Lucas's dialogue is so wooden and stilted,
mm-hmm.
you have to have somebody who's kind of used to that.
Yeah.
And Shakespearean dialogue, at the time it was super flowy and casual. Now, in today's English, it's very stilted and hard to figure
it's hard
out.
To deliver it accurately.
It's hard to deliver
yeah.
it accurately because it's not how we're used to saying things.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get an actor who is good at that in order to properly deliver George Lucas's dialogue.
Just to be clear, Samuel Ginn did just say George Lucas's writing is equivalent to Shakespeare.
Yes, that is what I said. No, of course that's not what I said.
That's what you said.
You remember when
that's
Shakespeare said, I hate
said.
Sand?
I'm sorry,
no.
That's what he said.
No, Shakespeare's writing is so good
uh-huh.
that it's hard to deliver because it's old.
Well, it's also
Lucas
it's
is
also
writing
arguably
is so
hard
bad
to understand.
That it's hard to deliver.
Because he's old.
Like, I am not defending George Lucas's dialogue
yeah.
writing. George Lucas's dialogue writing is terrible, and that's the point I'm making.
Mm-hmm.
Is
I know,
in order
I'm
to deliver it in a way that sounds natural, you have to have someone who is really good at delivering hard dialogue.
Yeah.
And that's why you have someone like Ian McDiarmid is probably the best actor in the whole saga, just in terms of pure acting.
Well,
because
even
he is a Shakespearean actor who is so good.
Thanks for tuning in, George Lucas. We're really happy that you're here.
Well, even outside of the whole, like, just George Lucas's writing, it is hard as an actor to tell a story and keep an audience engaged. Like, when you're when you're just sitting there and you're monologuing a story, like, it's hard to make it engaging enough to keep an audience paying attention.
It is.
When you're just like, this thing happened this one time and I'm talking about it. Like, it's really hard.
Yeah.
And that's where he does it so well. It's so engaging to watch.
And that's where George Lucas's filmmaking comes into perspective, too, because George Lucas actually helps him in the scene. He doesn't help him with, you know, the monologue, because he delivers it well, but there's some a little bit of stilted dialogue in there. But he puts them in a setting that enhances it.
Yeah.
Because the opera setting just enhances that scene so much.
They could just be talking in his office. Like, lesser filmmakers would just have them talking in his office and just, like, pacing back and forth by the window. Yep. But he's just like, no. What would they be looking at in space?
Some ribbons going
balls
through
of water. And ribbons and stuff,
And Mongolian throat singing.
Well, Anakin deduces that Palpatine is the Sith Lord behind the war and reports his treachery to Mace Windu.
A Sith Lord?
Who confronts and subdues him. Desperate to save Padme's life, Anakin severs Windu's hand before he can kill Palpatine, who kills Windu with Force lightning. So this is one thing. Okay, so He at first finds out he's a Sith Lord. He's like, no, I'm never going to do the... no. And then he goes to Mace Windu, and he's like, I'm turning him in. And Mace Windu's like, great, and shows up. And then he's like, you're under arrest. And then it... I don't know how exactly it gets to the point where Mace Windu's like, I just got to kill him right now, but...
Because they were ready to kill him.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
they walked in, they all ignited their lightsabers.
Yeah.
Him saying you're under arrest was a formality.
Okay, so here's the other thing. I guess I'm just, like, confused as to how that was, like, the hinging point for Anakin's whole, like, you know, I changed my mind kind of thing, because that was the hinging point.
I know what you're going to say.
Here we go. So, he goes and tells Mace Windu.
Yes.
And Mace Windu says, if this is true, you will have earned my trust, and doesn't let Anakin come with him.
Okay.
So, it reinforces Anakin's mistrust in the Jedi Council. And so then he sends Anakin away, and Anakin's sitting there in the Jedi Council, and then it's that whole scene. It's him looking out and realizing, which is another just incredible scene, him and Padme looking, you know, from miles away, essentially almost looking at each other through the windows. And it's Anakin coming to the realization in that moment that if he wants to save Padme, he has to save Palpatine. And so then when he goes back, he's not going there. He doesn't go back in expecting, I'm going to turn to the dark side here. He goes back in thinking, I've got to make sure Palpatine doesn't die.
Mm.
And then Mace Windu goes
and,
to kill Palpatine.
And here's the thing. So that's actually not that you're correct, yes, but the linchpin behind that entire scene is, it's like poetry, it just rhymes. In the beginning of the movie, he's like, should I do it? And Palpatine's like, do it. Palpatine says, he's too dangerous to be left alive. And then Anakin finds out he's a Sith Lord and realizes Palpatine bad, right? Palpatine Sith Lord. So then he rolls up on him because he's going to try and talk Windu down or make sure that he's good or whatever. And then Mace Windu's got his lightsaber to his neck. And he's like, I'm going to end this once and for all. He's like, no, that's not it. That's not at all.
Jedi.
It's not the Jedi way. He has to stand trial. If you, the pinnacle of Jedi, can't be a Jedi in this moment, then what is the point of me being a Jedi? And he says,
he's too dangerous
to be left alive.
The same line
Palpatine same thing a Sith said. And then at that point, what does it matter? Boom. And then he gets him.
That makes sense.
And that's really, really cool.
I mean, it makes sense. So with the lightning, he just cooks himself.
So Mace Windu reflects it back into his face.
That's what was happening. Yep. Okay, I thought he was like purposely just look like I can't control it to show my weakness
aspect of it that was him showboating.
He could have stopped.
Yeah,
like he didn't have to keep shocking
himself.
This
isn't working.
Right, but he did. to make it look, you know, like Mace Windu was hurting him more.
Commit to the bit.
Commit to the
bit. But it was Windu reflecting
make
right
your
back
face look
face.
Like an octopus. no, it was awful. Yes, okay. So, yes, he kills Windu with Force Lightning. Anakin pledges himself to the Sith, and Palpatine dubs him Darth Vader. Palpatine issues Order 66, which commands the clone troopers to kill their commanding Jedi generals across the galaxy.
The music there is
John's favorite scene. Because it's all the clones going crazy.
All of the music for all of, like, the darker sides of this movie... Like Anakin's betrayal and like
Anakin's betrayal,
dark deeds.
Anakin's dark deeds. I'm so sorry, Padme's ruminations.
He can name all of the
this
songs
is the
from the
best
score.
Soundtrack in Star Wars. Yeah. This movie is the best score.
So
in Star Wars.
Good.
Well, while that is happening, Vader and a battalion of clone troopers kill the remaining Jedi in the Jedi Temple, including all the younglings. All the little children. He just walks in and he's like, what do we do, Anakin? And he just ignites his saber.
In that scene, because they were trying to get the kid to be like scared when the lightsaber was ignited and they couldn't get him to do it right. So the kid actually told us he did an interview like last year. He's like in his 20s now. And apparently what they did to get him to, like, react like that is when Hayden was supposed to do it, he, like, screamed
yeah,
at
I
him.
Heard that. He just ignites it and goes, ah! And the kid's like, oh, God. That reminds me of, like, in It, when, what's the name? Bill Skarsgård, like, was told, awesome. You know, to start getting the kids, like, to get used to being scared of him, they, like, put him in a room with the kids, and they were like, Bill, just,
makeup,
like, try to scare them, and he made all the kids cry, and he felt so bad. He was like, I'm sorry.
I never noticed before that I thought about, I saw it when, in the final scene with him, with Anakin and Padme. Hayden kind of looks like Bill Skarsgård, just a little bit. His, he was doing something with his mouth.
Are you talking about the choking her scene?
Yeah, in that whole scene. He was doing something with his mouth when he was talking to Padme, and, like, his bottom lip was, like, starting to do the Pennywise face, the Pennywise smile.
Oh,
like, he was starting to stick
out a
little
bit. I didn't even notice that.
I was like, interesting. I've never... I only say it because you brought up Bill Skarsgård.
No, I mean, it is like an unhinged thing, you know? So, like, not super crazy. But yeah, so Vader then travels to Mustafar to assassinate the Separatist leaders, while Palpatine declares himself Emperor before the Galactic Senate, transforming the Republic into the Galactic Empire and denounces the Jedi as traitors.
So there's a line here that a lot of people... think is cringe. My dad being like, yeah, this is such a cringe line.
What Padme says.
Yeah. I love it.
I think
it's
true.
It's a great
which line?
Line.
I was about to say it all dramatic and cool.
So this is how liberty dies with thunderous applause.
No, I actually like that a lot.
Yeah.
I think it's like a really like poetic line.
It's awesome. Like it's like randomly poetic in like all this, you know, weird stuff going on, but then it's so satisfying. You're just like, well, I mean, she's right. Like,
it reminds me, I don't know if any of y'all have heard, I think it's the poem The Hollow Men by T.S. Eliot. It's one of my favorites, and it ends with like, this is the way the world ends, this is the way the world ends, not with a bang, but with a whisper. And it's and it's like that little thing. That line reminded me of that ending of that poem, and I was like, that's just so cool.
That's
I love
really,
it.
That's awesome.
It's a great line.
And it was actually like a good delivery from her too, because again, that's what I said when we were watching it. When she is alone and it's just like reaction shots, or it's like just, you know, just be in your pain or in your like fear or whatever, she does a good job. It's the second she's on screen with anyone else that everything falls apart.
Even her films with Ewan are rough, even her scenes with Ewan.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know, maybe it's just like a chemistry issue.
And
I don't
that
know.
Is why I stand by Hayden Christensen as an actor.
Yeah.
Because we know Natalie Portman.
And there was one like solid chemistry scene with them, and it was the scene that Tyler pointed out, which is where they first see each other in the movie, where she says that she's pregnant. The chemistry was pretty decent. Like it was okay.
Yeah. Hayden's, oh my God, man! Like that was the best acting in my opinion. That is some of, if not the pinnacle of Hayden's acting throughout this trilogy, because. Mm-hmm. He goes through all of the emotions that someone in his position would get when finding out that your secret wife is pregnant.
Well, and they allow him to. Like, they give him enough time. They don't say, like, oh, hurry up and say your line. Like, he takes a solid, like, almost 10 seconds to just be silent after she says that she's pregnant and to kind of, like, feel like, okay, that's a surprise. this is bad, but also I'm excited about it. And, yeah. like, you know, goes through, like, the whole thing. And he takes all the time that he needs to
this
actually
do it. This
is
a happy moment.
Yeah.
This is a happy moment.
This is happy.
You took her here to kill me.
Oh, gosh.
Back in the day, that was the voice that I used to make fun of Hayden Christensen. When it was in vogue to make fun of Hayden Christensen, that was the voice. It was just, they were like animals, and I slaughtered them like animals. I hate them.
God, I hate that.
This is a happy moment.
If that's not your voice for your Jedi character for our campaign,
oh my God, no.
I'm going to be upset.
Name's Jakar Monty, guys. What's going on?
Jakar.
You guys want to fight some droids, bro?
You want some spice?
You want some, yeah. Hey, you spice, bro?
You want some breadsticks?
Bro, you spice?
Well, having survived the chaos, Obi-Wan and Yoda return to Coruscant, where Obi-Wan learns of Anakin's turn to the dark side.
By seeing him dueling a Jedi Master while force-choking a youngling. It's such a small little moment, but it's like... It just showcases Vader's just complete badass.
Because Yoda just already knows. Like he can clearly like feel it that he's like oh yeah this was.
Well,
I
Obi-Wan like can too. He just doesn't want
to
believe it.
Right. Yeah. He's like Yoda I have to know that. For yeah. sure. And Yoda's like it's only gonna hurt you if you look. Like you already know. And he was just like nah, I gotta look at it. Like
yeah.
Ugh. So crazy.
Upset you will be.
And then we haven't mentioned Jet yet. Jet Lucas.
Yeah, that scene with Jet Lucas is the youngling who's wrecking the 501st.
Yeah, just rolling up on him.
And then, as Candace said, Jet got jetted.
Jet got jetted.
No, yeah, because...
That is only Candace can say a line like, Jet got jetted.
Bail Organa just rolls up and he's just like, what's going on here? And they're just like, buddy, you gotta go. We have it under control, don't worry. And he's like, okay, fine. Like, I guess that's what it is.
He's like, what's going on here? And they're just like... Get in the car, and he's like,
and turn around and leave.
He's
like,
car.
Okay.
Again, a scene that feels very out of place until you remember that there's a bunch of stuff cut.
It's a huge subplot of the creation of the rebellion.
Yeah.
Well, Yoda instructs Obi-Wan to confront Vader while he faces Palpatine. Obi-Wan seeks out Padme to find out Vader's whereabouts and reveals his treachery. Padme then travels to Mustafar, with Obi-Wan stowing away on her ship, and pleads with Vader to abandon the dark side and leave with her, but he refuses. Seeing Obi-Wan aboard the ship and thinking that they are conspiring to kill him, Vader uses the Force to choke Padme unconscious.
His face when he sees Obi-Wan. I know Danielle has said that she doesn't like Hayden's acting in this scene.
I don't really.
His face when he's looking at Padme and he's just like he's confused as to why she's not like coming along with him,
mm-hmm.
and then he looks up and he sees Obi-Wan and his face just like hardens.
Yeah. The only thing I will say, as someone who adores this movie and Hayden Christensen, is that this the back and forth that we did in the cold open, I do feel like. The line delivery was a little bit to be desired.
You're with him.
You're with him.
You wanted me to kill me.
You wanted me to kill me.
It's like,
so, here's my thing. So there's a fun fact I'm going to throw in that actually kind of helps me like the scene a little better, and maybe it'll help y'all like the scene a little better. And I'll mention it when we get there. But I'll be sure to kind of go into it, but I take less issue with how he delivered everything. Like, you know, the delivery, like the actual inflection was still like a little weird on words, but I guess I disliked his acting less. So in 2007, Dr. Eric, I'm going to butcher the last name, Bewey, a psychiatrist in France, co-wrote a study that diagnosed Anakin Skywalker with having borderline personality disorder. When the authors reported their findings at an annual meeting of the American Psychiatric Association, they stated that Skywalker fit the diagnosis criteria: difficulty controlling anger, stress-related breaks with reality, impulsivity, obsession with abandonment, and a pattern of unstable and intense interpersonal relationships characterized by alternating between extremes of ideation and devaluation.
Wow.
So that kind of explains his instant switch and like his sort of just unhinged quality to how he delivered everything.
Mm-hmm.
And like the fact that it was also a little bit like wooden because like it's like, like an actual thing going on in his head.
Wow.
So I don't mind it as much now.
Well,
like with that.
I love the line, and we talked about this line before, and you said you don't like it, and it's one of my favorite lines. When he screams, "You will not take her from me," I love it because he just force choked her. Yeah. And like that line is like the perfect like microcosm of how twisted he is at this point, how out of touch with reality he is. I love that line.
Yeah.
Because he just choked her out and then is screaming at Obi-Wan about how you will not take her from me, screaming like an unhinged madman, and it's like. Mm-hmm. Ooh.
No, and honestly, I had never taken really any issue with his acting before Obi-Wan appears, because when he's just talking to Padme, like, while the dialogue is cringe, it's, like, not a bad scene
Obi-Wan
between them.
Obi-Wan, turn against me. Don't you turn against me.
Like their scene where she's like, come on, let's just get out of here. Like, let's leave everything
and
behind.
Also,
let's not deal with this.
In my opinion, that's probably her best acting with him.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree.
Even her whole, you're breaking my heart, I know it gets memed. I think that's really
It's a terrible line, but she didn't do a terrible job delivering it.
Yeah, I agree.
Because even
I hate the line, but I don't hate her.
No, because I think she did a good job with it.
You're breaking my heart. You're going down a path I can't follow.
But it's just so
It's so wooden. That's
so
the thing.
It's so non-casual. It doesn't sound like something that somebody would say.
But he was going down a
path.
Yeah,
but the whole great thing about like writing is subtext. And so like the idea of her just saying, "You're breaking my heart." It's like, okay,
you're going down a path I can't follow.
But she's saying that because she was trying to be more subtle. She was trying to be like, "Hey, come on, let's go." And then Anakin's like, "No, like let's take over the galaxy." And she's like, okay, you're not getting it.
Yeah.
And so then she has to be explicit. Anakin, no, I can't follow you. We can't do this.
Line I don't really mind. Yeah. The one about you're going down a path I can't follow, I don't mind as much. It's the you're breaking my heart that kind of kills me. But
how would we know that her heart was being broken?
Good question.
But I guess knowing that that is like a thing, like, I guess bothers me. So it makes the scene a little less wooden for me, like with the acting. And so I was like, okay, like I can get a little more on board with it. Obi-Wan then engages Vader in a lightsaber duel that ends with Obi-Wan severing Vader's legs and left arm, leaving him at the bank of a lava flow.
Get wrecked.
That fight.
Wow. It was pretty good.
Is my favorite fight in movie history.
I mean,
it's just so intense. Like,
I don't know. Episode 8, the
shut up.
Danielle, you're so triggering. What are you on today? I thought coffee made you spicy.
I know, this coffee got me spicy today.
But the fight choreo, the fact that it's full, because, you know, like we talked about in episode 1, they slowed down the actual video to make it look.
Oh, they didn't slow it down.
And then in this one, they were like, screw it, we're letting you in and hating you.
Just go.
And they trained for months for this fight. They did I think I read something, they filmed the whole fight like 8 different times to get all the different camera angles.
And before they even started like doing, or maybe at the same time as they were doing some of the choreo, they had to do 2 straight months of just fencing and fitness training for the whole thing.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, those, you know, 2 weeks of filming would have been absolute misery. Imagine like the toll on your body.
Oh my gosh,
and they had to prepare too, because according to Samuel, when they were fighting, they threw actual lava at the 2 actors.
What?
No.
I know. Sold me on that. You looked so
breaking my heart.
You looked so honest with that. I was like, what?
Did you not hear my voice?
Tyler
like,
loves
what?
Taking things I say no, that are Russell. Like.
Well, for the record, Samuel, the way you said it did actually
them.
Sound like that. I had kind of the same reaction where Samuel last night was like, yeah, you know, that was like real lava that they. Like that's not
during
CGI.
During the scene of them being peppered with lava.
Yeah, and he was like, that's not CGI. And we were like, what?
And
are you out of your mind?
So they filmed real lava and then overlaid it onto the scene.
I knew what you meant, Samuel.
They filmed it. Apparently, it was
like...
You're the only one who understands me.
Apparently, it was like a volcano in Italy that was actually erupting at the time of filming. And so they just like took the filming from it and put it on there.
And then threw it at Hayden.
And then threw it at Hayden Christensen.
Yeah.
Catch.
But yeah, so Obi-Wan... Obi-Wan picks up Vader's lightsaber, watches in horror as flames consume the fallen Jedi and leaves him for dead.
And then Palpatine goes and picks him up in the same way Obi-Wan picked up Luke.
Here is my
putting his hand on his forehead.
Here is my, I guess, question. So I know, you know, as Jedi, you know, you're not supposed to, I guess, just like, you know, kill in cold blood. But God, at that point, it's just a mercy kill. Why not just put him out of his misery?
Because it's too painful.
It's too painful. And he had the high ground.
I mean, he
he has the high ground.
You think he's gonna walk down the slope?
It's dangerous. He could fall in the lava.
Yeah. It's real lava. You think Ewan wants to go by the axe and actually die? Throw the saber and then bring it back. That's brutal.
That's worse. That's worse than just doing it.
Brutal if he did that.
That's so cowardly.
I'm done.
I just feel like it's so much worse to leave your best friend burning alive next to lava instead of just like just killing him yourself, just like taking him out.
But if he did that, then we wouldn't have Darth Vader. Yeah.
Also, Ewan's monologue on the slope is...
It explains it pretty... Yeah.
That monologue,
Ewan's monologue
is
so emotional.
I loved you.
And Ewan's just sells.
He does a really good job with it.
He's such a good actor.
You feel so...
He's incredible. You just feel so bad for him, like, and not just him, but like Anakin. You just feel so much.
Well, on Coruscant, Yoda battles Palpatine until their duel reaches a stalemate. Yoda then flees with Senator Bail Organa and regroups with Obi-Wan and Padme on the planetoid, is it Polis Massa? Okay. There, Padme gives birth to twins, whom she names Luke and Leia, and dies soon after, having lost her will to live.
I hate that so
God.
Much.
We'll get to that in a second, but let's talk about Yoda versus Palpatine real quick.
Oh, so fun.
It was really good.
I love that fight.
So
one of my favorite little moments
the
in
force
it
force powers
is the fact that there comes a point in the whole fight where Palpatine says, screw it, I'm done with lightsaber fighting. Because he knows he can't beat Yoda in a lightsaber fight. So he just starts chucking stuff at Yoda left and right.
Mm-hmm. He also isn't a duelist.
It is my favorite part because, it showcases Yoda's faults. It showcases that he doesn't get it. Yoda does not, until he's a Force ghost. Even when he dies in episode 6, Yoda he doesn't get it. He doesn't get the big picture. And he keeps going after Palpatine with his lightsaber.
Yep, over and over.
He lands, he ignites his lightsaber. Palpatine's throwing more stuff at him. He has to turn off his lightsaber, jump away, lands, ignites his lightsaber. He's doing the same thing over and over and not helping himself in any way, and I love it so much.
It takes most of the fight, and then you see him go, and put the saber away, and then he kind of like force catches the thing and throws it back at him. Mm-hmm.
No, it actually gets knocked out of his hand because Palpatine shoots lightning at him, and he loses his handle, and his lightsaber falls down to the ground.
He clipped it first.
Threw the thing at Palpatine, then jumped up and ignited his lightsaber again, and then it got blasted.
And he was like, "Okay." And then I don't know if he was absorbing the lightning,
absorbing and reflecting.
Okay, yeah, because I saw that Palpatine was like, "Oh,
it's the same thing he does to Dooku in Episode 2."
It's a technique called Tutuminous, where you take that like energy and just kind of like disperse it or absorb it, depending on what.
No, it's waterbending from Avatar.
It's waterbending.
Yeah.
How sick would that be? How sick would that be if he just shot lightning and he just did the redirect?
Yeah, he's like, back to you.
Oh my god, and it's just them stepping each
other. Let's get to my favorite theory in Star Wars that is not canon, but is my headcanon. Her losing the will to live.
Oh, God.
It is
she didn't lose said her will to live.
In she didn't lose her will to live. It is said in the novel Plagueis, which is now legend, it's no longer canon because of stupidity, but it's a really good novel. It said that one of Plagueis' whole things that him and Palpatine did is it's using its life transference. Mm-hmm. It's the elements that they put into episode 9 in the sequel trilogy. They took elements of that, of the whole like life force transference.
Yeah, you remember in the sequel trilogy?
You remember that good move they made in the sequel trilogy?
They took that element from the novel Plagueis.
Yeah.
And so the theory, and this is my headcanon, is that Palpatine did the life transference
from Padme to Anakin.
Because they were connected. To keep Anakin alive.
And you
because
know
Anakin
what confirms that?
Should not have survived that.
No, he should have
you
died.
You want to know what confirms that? When they finally put the helmet on Darth Vader, the heartbeat monitor stops for a good like 5 seconds, and then right when the it starts beeping again, because he died and was brought back right as he was dying.
And that's
because
right when
Padme
dies.
Lost her will to live. But she's not over just, here crying, saying, "Oh, I just don't want to be here anymore."
She's saying
he's dying because her life is literally being taken from her. But you can't measure that.
Yeah,
on,
and so the medical droids are like,
"We don't know.
She's
she
just
is
dying.
Just dying."
That's actually cool. I like that better.
It's not canon. I'm just gonna say it's canon.
Gotta be, because any other explanation is so
stupid.
It makes so much sense. It makes all the sense in the world.
We don't know. She's
lost
the will.
Even with the heartbeats and all, like, it. I don't know if that was George Lucas's plan, but, like, it could have been.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
It is in our hearts.
Yep.
George Lucas,
and then there's the one last lie. There's the one last manipulation by Palpatine. That solidifies Vader as his pupil for forever, which is, it seems in your anger, you killed her.
Yeah.
Because once Anakin kills Padme, Anakin's dead.
Yeah.
Because Vader will not let Anakin come back up, because Anakin is the one who killed the woman he loves.
Alternatively, there is a slight deviation from your theory, which is that Anakin, desperately clinging on to life, accidentally used the life transference because he's still trying to, like, get good with the dark side, and he accidentally used that thinking of Padme as his last thoughts, and that dark side pulled her life force to him and ended up killing her. And Palpatine, knowing all of this, is like, "Ha ha, dude, you killed her."
No.
And Hayden begged so hard to be in the suit, and he was at the end of the day.
Yeah, he
but
was.
But he begged George Lucas. He was like, "Can you?"
I mean, I love that shot you pointed out of like the breath, like the haze,
really
like going
cool.
away when he breathes out. Oh, it's so cool.
Yeah.
But Palpatine retrieves a barely alive Vader, takes him to Coruscant, where his mutilated body is treated and covered in a black armored suit. When Vader asks for Padme, Palpatine says that she died in the heat of Vader's anger, and Vader screams in anguish. Obi-Wan and Yoda plan to conceal the twins from the Sith and go into exile until the time is right to challenge the Empire. As Padme's funeral takes place on her homeworld of Naboo, Palpatine and Vader supervise the construction of the Death Star. Bail takes Leia to his homeworld of Alderaan, where he and his wife adopt her, while Obi-Wan delivers Luke to his step-uncle and aunt, Owen and Beru Lars, on Tatooine, before going into exile to watch over the boy. Meanwhile, Yoda goes into exile on Dagobah. And that is Revenge of the Sith.
So awesome.
And Samuel had a very different reason why she looked pregnant at the funeral, where I had the biological reason.
I think it's both. Biologically, yes, she would still look pregnant.
She would still look pregnant.
But also, it was, I think it was also a way to make it look like the baby's died.
Yeah.
Because if Palpatine knows, and Vader knows she was pregnant.
Yeah.
So if Vader thinks the baby survived, he would go after them.
Yeah.
In the original trilogy, he clearly doesn't know about them, so they hit it.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I was sitting there like, yeah, you know, biologically, and Samuel's just like, no, it's just because of this. And I was like, oh, well, also biologically.
Oh.
So which other title would you give this movie from the series?
Shouldn't this one be The Empire Strikes Back?
Yeah, this is The Empire Strikes Back, I think.
Yeah.
Can I pull up that video that does the whole thing?
I think in that it says The Empire Strikes Back.
I think it says The Empire Strikes Back. I don't want to pull up the whole thing, because that's going to be long.
It's so
I got
good.
It.
But we also have to wait until we do episode 6, too. Because that's when we'll finish the... Well, no, we need to wait until episode 9, then.
Yeah, we have to wait all the way through.
Like, look at the video and be
like,
okay,
to look at
the
video
thing.
And see, like, what the official thing is. Yeah, let's just wait until, like, the end of the thing, and then we'll look at it.
Okay.
So I went on Amazon. The general consensus is pretty good. 83% rated it 5 stars, whereas 86% rated the novel 5 stars.
Wow.
So we've got, I guess that would make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works so too. I've got positive and negative. Which one do y'all want to hear first?
Attack of the Clones, yeah.
Let's hear positive first and then negative.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
you don't like it so much.
So this is from Abraham Kim, and this was in 2017. It's titled Revenge of the Sith, Flawed but Deeply Powerful and Significant.
Correct.
It is true that the prequels lacked the essence of the original and first trilogy, and that there are clearly many problems with the prequel films, especially the first two. That being said, all six films contain the essence of Star Wars, despite the fact that some of them, mainly the prequels, screwed up as films. However, I must say that Revenge of the Sith recaptured the old glory of Star Wars while simultaneously uncovering a new and original sensation. Perhaps it was Lucas rediscovering the essence that inspired him to create Star Wars in the first place. For me, the core of Star Wars is one of betrayal, tragedy, and redemption. Anyone who makes a Star Wars film must understand this. Revenge of the Sith, despite it being a prequel, will remain as one of my all-time favorite Star Wars films due to its execution and significance. The darker tone of the movie also suits Star Wars very well, as I believe that Star Wars films generally turn out better when they're darker in nature, because then the light can shine brighter. Star Wars is all about contrast and contradiction. Light versus dark, love versus hate, betrayal versus redemption, life versus death. Revenge of the Sith captured that perfectly, despite the juvenile editing and the goofy writing. 5 stars.
Light versus dark, good versus evil, Xander versus smoke.
Tune in to another game to get that joke. and then this is the negative one. This is just from Amazon customer, and it's titled
Coward.
And it's titled A CGI Mess with the Same Wooden Dialogue and Plot Devices That Ruined the Original Trilogy. The Revenge of the Sith is the best of the prequels, which is like saying that drowning is the best way to die. George Lucas litters needless CGI crap all over the screen. The dialogue is stilted, wooden, and laughable. This part's going to make you mad. The lightsaber duels are preposterous.
Shut up!
George Lucas went 0 for 3 on the prequels and all but wrecked one of the most beloved movie franchises of all time. This is where I lost my mind. The Force Awakens at least righted the ship, but then The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker were complete cinematic failures. 1 star.
Okay.
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 You're an idiot.
So that was that.
You're dumb and wrong.
Get out of here, Amazon customer.
Yeah. You coward. Won't even say
they
your real
say
name so
name.
I can find you.
No pride in yourself.
No
pride.
Courage. Well, what do you guys think that this is rated critically on Rotten Tomatoes out of 100?
It's always a toss-up with the prequels.
I know what it is, so I'm...
Okay, so you go last, then.
Okay. You know what we haven't done? We haven't done the horse method.
What?
We haven't done the horse method. But there's no horses in Star Wars. So we gotta use the force method.
Oh no.
How many force abilities were used during this movie?
Oh, my God. I'm gonna say it's an 81.
Okay.
Too many to count, Tyler.
Probably about 40. You think about 40?
Yeah, you know
40
what?
40 times
yeah,
2?
Go ahead.
80%.
Okay.
I'm going to take a swing and say 84 for the force.
Shall I say who's right?
Yes.
Yes.
It's Tyler. It's 80%.
It's the force method!
You just guessed! Why does it know all the force powers that were used? You did not count them.
Every single time.
It's exactly 80%.
Every time. Every time he uses some methods.
Go.
Every time he uses some dumb method,
he gets it exactly right. He did the egg method in Shape of Water and got it exactly right.
The dumbest thing, the egg method. You know, oh, fishmen love eggs.
He was
about,
like,
about 35 eggs, so we'll just add times
eggs.
2 and 70.
And it was exactly 70.
I can't believe it. That's awesome.
That's so dumb. Horse method, egg method, force method.
I'm so upset.
Well, now y'all get to guess the audience score out of 100.
I don't know.
Okay, so Samuel can play.
I'm going to say 83%. I think it's a little higher.
Okay.
I think it might be lower. I'll do 75.
Okay.
I'm going to go really close. I mean, I'm going to say, like, close enough that it's almost irrelevant, like 81. I'm going to stick with my original audience score, 81.
Okay.
I'm going to say 79.
Tyler, you're closest. You are not exact, though. It's lower than y'all think. It's 66.
Oh!
Yeah. It's a lot lower.
It's so strange to me. See, that just doesn't make any sense to me. That the critics would like this movie more than the fans.
Yeah.
Strange.
That's what it says.
That's kind of crazy.
That is a very bizarre twist. Normally,
and,
it's vice versa.
Yeah. And IMDb score out of 10.
I think I also know this. I'm not 100% positive.
Okay, so let everyone else go first.
I'm gonna hold out with 75.
Okay.
I'm gonna say 8.5.
Okay.
Oh, 7 point, whatever.
We'll say 8.1.
Okay.
I think it's 7.6.
It is 7.6, so you were the closest then. Ah. And, yeah, so the budget for this one was $113 million, and it made $868.4 million.
Smashing success.
Smashing success.
Man, what a failure of a movie, huh?
So where I'm adding in our little awards section. It didn't win anything at the Oscars, but it was nominated for one thing at the Oscars, which was Best Achievement in Makeup, which I'm not surprised by. Because, Palpatine's whole prosthetic thing didn't surprise me.
This is the only Star Wars movie ever not be nominated for Best Special Effects.
Milkshake. Yeah, this one was not nominated for Best Special Effects.
Of the nine Star Wars films, this is the only one to not be nominated for Best Special Effects.
It did win, some other awards at, some other little award shows, but, I'm sticking with the big guys,
Fun fact, because we didn't do it then, do y'all know who the only person, I think you do, so I'm not going to let you answer, one person in Star Wars has been nominated for an acting Oscar?
Is it someone in the prequels? Can you give us a hint of,
John,
like, which...
John, what you... No, I'm not going to say... What? John, what's your guess?
Yeah, you figure it out.
You can figure it out. I'm wrong, and I know I'm wrong, but for the meme, I'm going to say Samuel L. Jackson.
I'm just going to go with Ian McDiarmid.
It's got to be Harrison Ford.
I think it's Ian McDiarmid, but I genuinely don't remember.
Best Supporting Actor, Alec Guinness.
Oh,
I did know that. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Oh, okay.
I thought for sure it was Harrison Ford.
I mean, I didn't think it was Harrison Ford, but I would have expected Ian McDiarmid. So I got some fun facts here. So George Lucas deliberately made the Darth Vader suit top heavy, adding a bunch of weight to the helmet to make Hayden Christensen not appear too accustomed to it in this movie, since he had just stepped into
it. Kind of awkward.
So they made it top heavy, so he was kind of stumbling a little bit.
That is pretty clever.
Too bad he can't ride that.
You can actually find, so remember how I said all of the Palpatine rescue scene was originally over an hour? All of it can be found in the video game for this movie. All of the footage from it. Yep, is in the video game. The extra footage of the Palpatine rescue is in the video game.
I own that video game on the PlayStation 2, so I can bring it over and we can watch it sometime.
Check it out in Force Comedy!
That's actually a really good fighting game.
Forced comedy. Yep. So a 10-year-old Han Solo was going to appear during the Battle of Kashyyyk as an orphan being raised by Chewbacca. He would have helped locate General Grievous by finding part of a transmitter droid that was sending signals from Utapau, allowing Obi-Wan to find and confront the villain. They ended up cutting it, and so obviously the whole story of Han Solo and Chewbacca is very different from that. So yeah, that we already, I think, covered. Okay, so the volcanic world of Mustafar was designed to look like George Lucas's vision of hell. just what he thinks hell looks like.
Wow.
With real lava.
Now with real lava.
Look out, Ewan.
So all shots of 3PO had the entire green screen set reflecting in his shiny gold armor, so the digital effects artists in post-production had to digitally repaint 3PO's armor frame by frame to remove any traces of it.
Oh my god, that's terrible.
Why?
So countless hours went into that.
That's a lot of work.
And that's why when it's a far shot of three protocol droids there, they're like, We're gonna use MS paint.
Color film.
Just color film.
That is so cursed.
It's so awful.
That's exactly what it looked like, too.
No, Ewan McGregor apparently asked if he could also play one of the Emperor's red-robed Imperial Guards. However, it is not known whether he did or not.
Of course
that's
he did.
Fun.
Of course he did.
If he asked, I'm sure they let him.
Come on.
And then they just had a guy in the green screen, in a green morph suit, just push him up against the wall.
The planet Mustafar's similarity to the Arabic name Mustafa roughly translates to the Chosen One. So that's on purpose.
Wow.
Interesting.
And this is the whole General Grievous thing that I'm kind of excited about. So one of the early concepts for General Grievous was actually a small child sitting on a floating chair guarded by two IG-88 droids from Episode 5. George Lucas ended up rejecting this look as a child would not be taken seriously as the deadliest hand-to-hand fighter in the galaxy, which is how he wanted Grievous to be portrayed. Instead, part of the final look for General Grievous's face was inspired by the shape of a bathroom detergent spray nozzle. So that's where that goes from.
I adore Star Wars.
Oh, man.
So stupid. So much.
Wow, good stuff.
That man's face
Dude,
was based off
special
of...
effects people are just, they're just like, hmm. That mic.
They get the
We're
spray
gonna make
nozzle.
Something out of this.
They're looking at the spray nozzle.
This could be
General Kenobi.
Well, it's like in episode one where they're like, we need a comm for a Qui-Gon. See that women's razor?
Grab it for me. Give me some paint. Let's do this.
Let's do it. All right, guys. Time to recast with this one.
Are we sticking with the original things?
I'm gonna make Tyler happy. Tyler's Dooku.
Oh, of course, because he was already Count Dooku.
Yeah.
John's Palpatine.
I keep it though.
Yeah, that's good.
We had it as you as Anakin and me as Obi-Wan for the rest of this.
Which is dope.
And I'll be Padme.
That's the cast, everybody.
if we played Yahtzee, though, and reshuffled the deck, what would it
be? Yeah,
if we reshuffled the deck.
None of those characters.
Otherwise, it'd be going on for...
If we reshuffled the
deck. John would be Bail Organa.
Danielle,
agreed. Oh, I'm
Danielle is Anakin Skywalker.
100%. That's exciting.
Russell had that is darkness. Russell's Obi-Wan. That's awesome.
Yes.
I was going to say you as Palpatine.
I was going to say him
the Force
as,
method
I was
going
to say him as Grievous because he would
oh,
chew that
yeah,
so
okay,
hard.
You as Grievous. Yes.
He would not
you as
be very happy with both. Yeah, if it was Palpatine, he'd be like, "Oh my god, acting." But if it was Grievous, it's like, "This is so much fun."
And in that case, I put Samuel as Palpatine.
Hey.
Yeah.
Do it.
Should I do it?
Samuel is very good at that subtle acting, and I think he could do that.
Don't do it. Screw it.
So before we do favorite and least favorite moments, we came up with a new little segment last week that I really liked, and I want to keep it. So we have to come up with a drinking game for this movie with at least three rules. So what would the drinking game for this movie be?
meme.
Anytime there's just a straight up meme.
Yes, anytime there's a meme, you gotta
drink. Okay.
I like that.
You're drunk 15 minutes in.
Anytime a Jedi does a really serious, crazy looking jump, drink.
Okay. And anytime R2 screams, drink.
Okay, there we go. That's our drinking game.
There's the game.
Okay, so favorite and least favorite moments from this one.
I think my favorite moment. Padme's ruminations is really good, but I think my favorite, it's gotta be the fight.
Yeah,
it's gotta be the fight.
The fight's stupid. It's so good. What lights me up the most?
I have my least favorite too.
If you have them both, go ahead and throw them out.
Hold me, like you did by the lake on Naboo.
Oh God, cringe, cringe.
You just triggered everyone. Especially since you like, delivered the line, like put your arms together, like you wanted to cuddle.
Yeah, my least favorite was that, and then when she turns around and goes, maybe it's just because I'm so in love.
And then Hayden cannot get through the line without laughing. That's because he's like, it's because I'm so in love with. He's like laughing in the delivery of the line.
No, Padme, it's because I'm so in love with you.
So love is blind. Did you? And again, he laughs.
Because
she's like, so love is blind. And he's like, that's not what I meant.
That's not what I said. I didn't say that.
What are you stupid?
You dumb.
I feel like that was Hayden and Natalie Portman just being like, we
can't take this scene.
And Anakin said that.
Oh, yeah, I bet he did.
Yeah, I hated that scene where he was all misogynistic.
Anyway, Tyler, what about you? Your favorite and least favorites?
My least favorite, I can tell you right now, is...
No, well, we're all just kind of doing our least favorites, I thought, right now. But
Samuel said both of his.
Oh, okay. I mean, my favorite was definitely the... Like, just final flashing between the two duels, like between Yoda and Palpatine and then Obi-Wan and Anakin. Because I love both of those fights so much. And, like, just being able to flip between both of them was, like, a really cool, just, like, I guess, it was a cool little dichotomy of, like, Obi-Wan and Anakin are very, like, evenly matched for the most part, whereas Yoda and Palpatine have completely different styles. And so flipping between those two fights was really cool to watch.
My favorite is definitely the opera scene.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Is pretty good. My least favorite is... I don't know if this is us being punished because we were watching it on a high-res TV, but God in heaven, some of those shots with the clones in the background. Oh, yeah,
because all of the clones,
the CG renders were atrocious. And
there was not one bit of actual clone armor in this movie.
It was when they were on one of the Republic transport ships, and there were two clones like in the back. I think
the armor was like floating around,
and it was. I'm just like, guys, not for nothing, but what am I looking at? So that and like the shot that I had to rewind to show you guys of the protocol droids
were just MS painted
amorphous blobs of humanoid figures was a little.
Cringe.
And that's my answer.
Yeah.
I'm
going to start with least favorite because I am such a big fan of practical effects.
Yeah.
Of which this movie has so few.
Yeah.
I mean, so few.
Yeah.
Like, all of the practical stuff with all of, like, the combat is very satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
Just have one suit of clone armor.
Yeah, just one.
Just make four suits of clone armor, and then for those key scenes where you have a clone that you're really close to with that camera, mm-hmm. like you don't have to do the cringe thing, and then just reuse those four guys in those four suits 200 times, and then you just have overall a better looking scene in so many scenes.
Can I mm-hmm. speak on that real quick?
Yes.
So, we got to remember the time that this was released. When this was released, and this is coming from a guy who's just said the same thing, but the time that this was released was in the mid-2000s where CGI, like the late 1990s and the mid-2000s, this is when CGI was like the thing. This is the new toy that all the filmmakers wanted to do, and for the time, the CGI looked really, really, really good. So what ended up happening is in the mid-2010s, CGI fell out of favor and practical effects became chic again. And so that's why, because right now where we're at, just from a cultural movie appreciation standpoint, yeah. like some of the people, like there are people, I don't know if y'all are those people, but there are people who praise an aspect of the sequel trilogy being that it steers more heavily into practical effects, when actually the sequel trilogies have more CGI than the originals. They just do it better because now we have modern technology.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's less of George Lucas going like, I don't feel like making the things. It's like, why would I? We've got this new technology. Yep. This looks so cool. Everything looks uniform. And if we didn't, then it would look really cringe.
I mean, you're right, but just a little bit. Yeah, I mean,
just
you know,
because it's true doesn't mean that it's right.
You can't. Anyway.
You can't give in.
So that is my least favorite stuff, just because it's so frustrating. And I just hate it.
Your favorite.
My favorite has got to be, I mean, it's a little broad.
Movie.
I really, really love the first opening scene with Obi-Wan and Anakin piloting their starfighters towards mm-hmm. towards Grievous' ship. It's so much fun. Their relationship is so like personified in that moment. It's like just so clear what they're about, like what they've been doing together for the past 6 years, and it's so satisfying. Yeah. But that's just like a pick that I'm going with, because really my favorite stuff is just every time that Anakin and Obi-Wan are on screen together. Like, they just have so much chemistry together as people.
Because they loved
each
other so much.
As people that, like, when they're doing those scenes, it just looks like they're just casual, having fun, laughing together. He's like, I'd say if it's given for the 10th time, it's like 9th time. That business on Katamoria does not count. I'll see at the briefing. It's so casual. Like, it's so, like, natural. Like, their dialogue is so natural. Yeah. And it really, like, makes it just better in general. So that really is my favorite stuff. But if I had to pick one, it's the beginning scene.
Yeah.
Johnny boy?
So least favorite, and I didn't notice it till actually Russell pointed it out to me. Just from us, it's the one part, like, other than whenever Tyler rewound the protocol droids, and it's the only moment where I really, like, hardcore, like, noticed how, like, the CGI was kind of off a little bit, was whenever Obi-Wan gets crushed by the platform during the Count Dooku fight.
I hate that so much.
And it straight up looks like the thing just clips completely through.
Yeah. Like it looks like his legs get destroyed.
Crushed.
Yeah.
Like
and
he shouldn't be able
dead.
To walk.
Like he's never gonna walk again.
Exactly.
Oh, it drives me nuts.
It just wasn't made that well, and it just It's the one time that I genuinely, one of the few times I genuinely noticed the CGI, like, huh? What?
I just a pee picking.
No, the worst moment of CGI for me was the babies. That was so bad.
Oh, yes.
Oh my gosh.
I actually can't in good conscience pick between these two moments, so I'm going to say both of them for favorite. My first favorite, just across the movie, just because I love myself a good battle scene, is the fight on Kashyyyk, which...
Oh, yeah.
Just the whole war sequence on Kashyyyk was just fantastic. And my second favorite is the 501st March up to the temple, mostly because in Star Wars, like I said, I grew up playing Star Wars Battlefront 2 way more than I should have.
Man, after my own
but
heart.
But in that 501st journal, as that's happening and the cutscene's playing, you're just like, it's a whole different perspective that I just enjoy so much.
Yeah.
As a clone buff, I love it so much.
Yeah, we were riding up to the Jedi Temple. We all knew what we needed to do. Not a single one of us spoke a single word. Like, oh, man. It's so good.
It's so good.
It's
I'll really play it after. I just love it so much.
Well, out of 10 Dewits, what would you rate Revenge of the Sith?
This is a 10 out of 10 for me. I adore this movie.
You've been holding on to that, Danielle.
Oh, no, I just thought of it.
Oh, you did?
I just thought of it. Oh, I was like, what are we going to do for the 10 out of 10? And I was like, it's got to be that.
Do it.
It's got to
be
Dewits.
I'm going to hit you with 10 Dewits. It's that good.
Yep.
Okay.
To me, it is. It's flawed, but to me, it's
well, I'm waiting on y'all.
Okay. I'll go first since I had my favorite, least favorite first. I think this one is, it's so good, and I enjoy so much of it, but it definitely is flawed, and I just hate so much of the CGI, especially since, like some of it could have looked better if you had just done a few practical effects mixed in. Nothing crazy, but just a few mixed in. I'm going to give this one I'm going to give it an 8.7. You're so cursed. I'm going to give it an 8.7. It's so close to a 9, but just a little bit of the visual stuff, like that Dooku scene where this giant metal scaffolding falls on Obi-Wan, just it's the worst. So, 8.7.
Gotcha.
10 out of 10 Dewits.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There was so much happening and there was so much engagement that honestly, like, I understand the CGI was not great, but there was so much content and so much action packed into this film where I honestly hate it. I just didn't care.
It's strange, okay? It's strange because this movie came out, what, 20 years ago?
No, it was like 17 years ago.
More or less. Close to 20 years ago.
Yeah, okay.
We look back on, like, Star Wars in 1977. Right?
Yeah.
And we look at it and we go, wow, it looks so good, especially for 1977. Like, look at all the stuff they were able to do. That's so cool.
Yes, we do not do that.
Episode 3 looks better than any of the original trilogy.
Facts. Facts. He's not wrong.
Don't try to bully him out of his rating.
I'm not. I'm just saying.
You're ashamed of yourself.
I'm just pointing something out. Episode 3 looks better than any, it looks more realistic than any of the original trilogy, but for some reason, because it's newer, even though it's still almost 20 years old at this point, and it's still, at the time, it was better than anything else that was coming out in 2005, except for Lord of the Rings, that's the only thing, but Lord of the Rings was it was practical to the point of, like, they built castles. But, like, it looked better, it was the best-looking sci-fi film ever, the most realistic-looking sci-fi film in 2005, and for some reason, we don't look back on it and go, yeah, especially for its time, it looked incredible. We don't do that with the prequels.
I recognize that there's bias with me about that. 100%,
yeah.
Because you're right. But I think a big part of that is that I have so much appreciation for practical effects because I'm such a big, like, practical effects buff and fan that I don't appreciate the effort and time it takes to do CGI effects.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that definitely is where my bias lies, and that's for myself. As far as, like, being entertained, the movie is a 10,
yeah.
But I just can't look past my own bias.
Yeah. You watch Corridor Crew. They do a lot of, like, I think
I've seen some of their stuff.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Well, so I'm not really even focused on the CGI because it bothered me more the like when I watched it just with Samuel. But this time around, it didn't bother me as much. It really, except for the babies, it didn't really bother me at all because the babies were like twitching in their hands, and I was like, okay, come on, y'all. It also looked like they had copy and pasted the same baby onto the second person, and I was just like, oh, okay.
They're twins. I mean, come on.
And so they move the same.
She's carrying twins.
But yeah, so I'm not really worried about that because the CG didn't really bother me. I'm taking off for the dialogue because there were some really awful dialogue moments that made me really cringe. And now I'm taking off half a point just because, as someone who isn't a huge Star Wars nerd, I had trouble keeping up with planets and what's going on politically and all that stuff. I had so much trouble.
Also fair.
That's I had
fair.
A lot of trouble being like, they'd be sitting there like, go to this because of this. And I'm like, hold on, go back and get. And
we
get,
just landed in Coruscant.
Yeah, I was very confused about most of the politics, what the planets were and why, and like all this stuff. So for me, I would rate it an 8.5 because it was still super entertaining and engaging and had some really, you know, fantastic moments in it. So I'm not going to rate it any lower than that, but I had to take off a point and a half just for those things for me. But yeah, I would give it an 8.5. It's still a ton of fun. It's still very well done and fun to watch, even if you get a little lost like me, because I can keep up with just the overarching line of Anakin's fall from the Jedi and just keep up with that, even if I can't keep up with any of the politics. But yeah, unless y'all have any final thoughts, I think we're ready to get out of here.
I think that's it.
All right.
Good.
Well, just a reminder, y'all can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Mad Artists Entertainment or on Twitter at @artists_mad and on Twitch at Mad Artists Co. We will have officially premiered Netherdeep yesterday once this is released. We're really, really excited about it. All of us are in it, doing different things. Russell's the DM and we're all playing different characters. What are you doing?
Russell, check your phone.
What is happening?
I hate where you're going with this. I know what you're doing. This is the cringiest thing. I hate this.
Hello?
This is Netherdeep.
Stop! I knew you were going to do it! Stop!
Everyone, Netherdeep is calling. It is your responsibility to check it out every Tuesday night. We start streaming at 7 p.m. every
Eastern
single
Standard
night.
Time.
Yeah, 7 p.m. 7 Eastern
PM.
Standard Time. You can also check it out on our YouTube channel after the fact.
Every time.
Stop! No, we'll be uploading.
I love that you had to like prime me. We couldn't actually
so
just
terrible.
Fluidly do it because I might ring her off.
So terrible. No, we're going to be uploading all of them to YouTube, and I think we might also be uploading the audio as its own podcast as well.
Yeah, we're definitely hoping to do so just for those listeners.
Yeah, for people who prefer to just
wanna,
do audio listening.
Who don't want to, you know, tune
who
in on
listen
Tuesday night.
While they're working.
Yeah, you know, and don't want to have to stare at something, too.
Don't want to see the hard work that we put in for this set. It is a cool set.
It is a cool set, and you should actually watch it at some point.
It's your responsibility to watch it. Make yourself do it.
Don't disrespect us like this.
Yeah, you can kind of see some bits of the set and everything about how it's going to look on our social media right now. We're releasing a bunch of promo footage and actually recording some more promo footage for it today.
In like 20 minutes.
Yeah, in like 20 minutes. You can visit our website for more information about what we're doing and what's coming up. That's madartistsco.com. If you have any comments, questions, corrections, or requests that we should review in the future, you can message our social media or email us at banterbox.madartists@gmail.com. Leave us a review wherever you're listening. It really helps us out, and we will see you guys next time.